You may be familiar with the phrase, the only problem with empathy is that we don't have enough of it, but not according to Paul Bloom, who in his latest book argues that empathy is one of the leading motivators of inequality and immorality. Against Empathy, The Case for Rational Compassion is published by Echo, and it brings Paul Bloom, a professor of Yale at Yale and an award-winning, internationally recognized expert on child psychology, back to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
You say empathy means many different things to different people. What's your definition?
So some people think empathy just means everything good, to be moral, to be kind, to be compassionate, and I have nothing against that. But my definition, which is how many people think about empathy, is putting yourself in another person's shoes and feeling what they feel, particularly feeling their suffering.
And isn't that something we're taught from childhood on?
A lot of people think that's what makes us good. But it turns out that when you look at it closely, empathy has all sorts of bad effects. It's biased. We feel much more empathy for somebody who looks like us, who is attractive, who is part of our group. It's innumerate. We feel more empathy for the one than for the many. And it could be weaponized. Demagogues and politicians of all sorts use our empathy for suffering victims to motivate us to be cruel to others.
You call your book a discussion of morality and moral psychology, of what it takes to be a good person. But who gets to decide what a good person is?
Well, it's a good question. I try in my book to stick to cases where we would all agree. So most people I know would agree that it's wrong to treat somebody differently because of the color of their skin. It would be wrong to shut down a social program if it caused the suffering of many people. It would be wrong to get into a war that was unnecessary and cruel.
You're describing the real world.
I am describing the real world. What I'm saying is each of these kinds of decisions could be motivated by empathy. So if I could get you to agree with me about certain fundamental moral issues, I could get you to consider that maybe empathy leads us astray.
Is there a difference between cognitive and emotional empathy?
Absolutely. So people use different terms. And cognitive empathy usually refers to understanding, knowing what's going on in someone's head. And I have nothing against that. I don't think it makes us good. It's a form of intelligence, and like any form of intelligence could be used for good or evil. But it is, I think, an essential part of being a person. Emotional empathy is more my target, where it's feeling the pain of others, feeling their suffering, and it's that which I argue has certain very serious flaws.
You call it morally corrosive.
It's morally corrosive. It leads us to decisions that, upon reflection, are bad decisions, are immoral decisions, are cruel decisions.
But haven't pretty much all moral revolutions used empathy to justify the change, often for the good?
So I wouldn't.
For example, when laws are enacted as a result of some terrible thing, and we realize we don't want that sort of thing to happen again.
So empathy is a tremendously powerful tool, and you and I can think of many cases where it's been used to make the world better. But for each case we could think of, we could also think of a case where it could make the world worse. A lot of the pro-slavery movements were driven by empathy for slave owners. A lot of war and discrimination and violence were driven by empathy for the victims.
You seem to be suggesting that this can also be a political matter. Did you see that in practice during the recent election campaigns?
Yeah, lots of it. So take the anti-immigrant rhetoric, or rhetoric towards about Mexicans or Muslims. Donald Trump and Ann Coulter before him in her book Adios America, which motivated a lot of Trump's immigration policies, basically made the argument by making us feel empathic towards the so-called victims of immigrants. Her book, for instance, is a story about rape and child rape. And our empathy for suffering people is used to energize hatred against marginalized groups. This is something which is used over and over again in American history and European history. And it's a case where we're letting our emotions run riot, often with terrible results.
Today is the anniversary of the Sandy Hook shootings. The Orlando nightclub shooting is still fresh in our minds. Dylan Roof's trial is currently underway. And each time something like that happens, there's a call for more gun control. Isn't that an expression of empathy?
I think it is an expression of empathy, but people on the gun control side tend to forget that advocates of gun rights also appeal for empathy. They appeal for empathy for the person defenseless against a violent criminal who's assaulted because the government has taken away her right to have a gun. And I think the way we should see it is empathy is a tool that both sides could use. For any liberal conservative contrast you give me, I could show you empathy works in both sides.
But conspiracy theorists claim that events like Sandy Hook are really hoaxes being used to impose more gun control as part of a left-wing agenda. How does that fit into your ideas about empathy?
I think that's simply insane, and I don't know.
Well, an awful lot of people go along with it.
An awful lot of people are very paranoid about how people.
Alex Jones is making a living from it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to be said about Alex Jones. I guess what I'm thinking more is in terms of the rest of us, non-conspiracy theorists, and we're often swayed by empathy for our arguments pro and con. And what I'd like to suggest is that you could step back, and for questions like immigration, gun control, and so on, we're better off using a sort of more rational, more reasoned approach. I know it sounds heretical to say in 2016 in the post-fact world, but part of my book is arguing against empathy. A lot of my book is arguing in favor of reason.
Hasn't President Obama attempted to approach the debate on gun control with arguments based in reason? That doesn't seem to have worked.
I think Obama has actually been in some way a model for rational deliberation. Reason isn't going to work right away. But emotional sways for emotion, just like appeals for emotion, appeals to empathy, to anger, to rage, often have a tremendous short-term boost. But I'm enough of an optimist to think that rational deliberation and argument in the long run are what makes the world better.
My guest is Paul Bloom, whose latest book is Against Empathy, The Case for Rational Compassion. So rational compassion, how is it all that different from empathy?
So it comes in two parts. The rational part is exactly what it sounds like, which is when we make moral decisions, we think about their consequences. We shouldn't, when we give to a charity, we shouldn't do it based on the buzz it gives us, but what kind of difference it makes. When we interact with our children, we should think what will make them happy, what will express our love, and not respond to empathic needs. The compassion part is different from empathy. So the idea of compassion is you can care for people, you could value people without putting yourself in their shoes. And this is a key insight in Buddhism. It's a key insight in a lot of meditative practice, that kindness need not emerge from an empathic connection with suffering.
But many people would consider the two to be pretty synonymous. For example, you see a documentary about starving children in the third world, and you think about you put yourself in the shoes of their parents or in their shoes, and you call up and you give some money to a charity. Or just this morning I heard about the water situation in Flint, Michigan, where many people sent bottled water to the city. They're getting less now because it's been a year since the crisis. But or another case, Aleppo, or seeing children drown as they tried to make it to safety in Europe. Isn't that response all empathy?
A lot of it is, but a lot of response.
And isn't that a positive response?
I think unmediated by careful consideration of the right thing to do, it's often a terrible response. A lot of money given to charities goes to waste, but a lot of money given to charities, even worse, particularly for foreign aid, makes the world worse. It causes bad effects. The question of the Syrian boy drowning, for instance, is a very moving image. But what does that mean? Does that mean we should do a ground invasion, more airstrikes, more money for this group, more support for a counter group? It's reason and rationality combined with a caring for other people that will answer these hard questions. Empathy doesn't help.
Well, it hasn't led to many people in this country wanting to allow more Syrian children into the country as immigrants. But isn't reason, like empathy, subject to bias?
Yes. We are not perfect reasoners. But reason, unlike empathy, has a corrective process. If I give you a bad argument, a biased argument, faulty evidence and everything, you can correct me. We could go back and forth. And through this, we could come to become more rational beings and get the answer right. We do this for science, and we also could do this for morality. Well, empathy just drives me in one way or another, sort of unconstrained by the sort of forces that make us better reasoners.
On the other hand, aren't people much more likely to be swayed by an emotional argument than a logical one?
I think it depends. I think it depends on the person, depends on the argument. But I would concede, yes. I would concede if I want us to go to war or I want us to expel a bunch of people from the country or something like that, making a rational argument probably is not as powerful as me telling you empathic stories that make you weep. But at the same time, your point could be made about racist arguments, which are also very powerful. But I think we could learn not to rely on them.
You cite Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth as a good example of a film that made a huge impact by focusing on truth and not emotion. But how much of a practical and political impact has it had in the long run?
So climate change is an interesting case because we are not acting anywhere near as much as we should on climate change. But I think that that shows the weakness of relying on empathy. I think the extent... In some way, I think we rely too much on empathy and we're too drawn by empathy. And a crisis like climate change has no victims, nobody to empathize with. So I'll agree with you that the progress of that the forces of reasons are reason is slow, takes a long time, and is difficult, but it points us in the right direction. It's reason and rationality that tells us that climate change is a problem in the first place.
A number of listeners have called in wanting a clarification between empathy and compassion. Maybe we weren't clear enough.
Yeah, so empathy is feeling the suffering of another person. When I say I feel your pain, and there's a lot of neuroscience evidence that we literally do feel other people's pain. That's what I'm against. Compassion is caring for a person, valuing their lives, but without necessarily sharing the pain. So one example of this is my child comes and he's extremely anxious because he hasn't done his homework and it's due. If I feel his anxiety, that's empathy. But if I love him and respond with calmness and care, that's compassion.
A professor called in who teaches courses on empathy, and he said that he feels empathy is necessary to survival. He wants to ask you about the distinction between identity and empathy. Do you necessarily lose your identity if you engage in empathy?
I don't think so. I think that we can. I'm against empathy, but I'll concede I could empathize with you without losing my sense of who I am. I do think, though, that there's an arrogance behind a lot of empathic claims. People often tell somebody like me I should empathize with women who are sexually harassed or
shouldn't you?
No, I should care about them. But the idea that I could feel what it's like to be them, and that's an important distinction, I think is arrogant and misguided. I think it sets the bar too high, and it leads to inaction because people say I just don't have that much empathy in me.
But a friend told me about his wife was raped. And up until that time, he never even thought about what that might mean to another person. But suddenly he started thinking a lot more about kind of like a penny for your thoughts.
Yeah.
Because now he really he loved her and he wanted to know what was going on inside her. Isn't that empathy?
I think that goes back to what you said about cognitive empathy, which is, with regard to intimate relationships, it's really important to understand what's going on in another person's head. But I'll tell you, with that example, I very much doubt he could know what it would be like to be raped. And I'm not even sure that that's what he should aspire to. He should aspire to understand his wife as best he can, care for her, help her, love her. But the sharing of the feeling is, I think, first impossible, but also not productive. It's not what she needs.
How can we be less empathic? Is it empathic, empathetic?
That was the big question in my book I struggled with.
What would decision-making process look like if we're not going to be empathetic?
I think there's two kinds of answers. On an individual level, processes like mindfulness meditation have been shown to diminish empathy but increase compassion. But I think also there could be more of a cultural change. So take racism. We have these tremendous racist biases, and the solution to them isn't to say, oh, let's all try to be less racist. Rather, the solution is to set up a world where we'd be ashamed to give racist explanation. We try to set up situations where racism can't apply. We try to sort of use our intelligence to defeat those aspects of our psychology that we don't like.
Well, we do have laws for example, fair employment laws, but that doesn't prevent people who are hiring from hiring one group more than another, white males more than white females, white males and females more than blacks, or if the person is black, more blacks than whites.
Absolutely right. So what do you do in a situation like this? Well, there's answers. So one answer, for instance, is say, I'm never going to get rid of my racist or sexist biases, but if I want to, I could do blind reviewing, for instance. I could review people without knowing their race or their sex. With regard to government interventions and disasters and foreign aid and foreign policy, there are mechanisms to do so that would get around those biases that we possess that we really would rather not have.
So can we do that legally, or is that something that we just do voluntarily?
I think both. I think, as you pointed out, some laws are there to protect us from our worst impulses, while a lot of it is social and cultural practices. So I feel a lot more empathy for people who look like me than others, but I know I'm not supposed to. And so the culture forces me against that.
Are you surprised at all by the all of this talk about the alt-right recently?
The alt-right. I'm on Twitter, so I've experienced the alt-right personally, and I think it's one of the ugliest movements to emerge in
people
American
send
politics
you
for a while.
Troll you with hate mail,
anti-Semitic tweets and that sort of thing. Yeah,
and is it just simply because you're Jewish or because of your message?
I think it's because I'm Jewish. I've been accused of a Jew trying to destroy Western values.
Paul Bloom is the Brooks and Suzanne Reagan Professor of Psychology at Yale University, author of numerous books. The one we've been discussing is Against Empathy, The Case for Rational Compassion, and it is published by Echo. And Professor Bloom, I sure hope that this conversation doesn't get you any more hate mail. I know it's going to get me a little bit because we have trolls who write to us regularly. I wonder sometimes whether they have any empathy or compassion in them.
I'm sorry for feeding the trolls, but thank you so much for having me on.